Good morning, radio listeners. My name is Delroy Lake, president of the Anguilla Hotel and Tourism Association. And today, we're on the program, Tourism is Key. Today, my guest is Mr. Vincent Vanderpool Wallace from the Bahamas, former Minister of Tourism for the Bahamas and former CTO Secretary General. Good morning, Mr. Vanderpool Wallace. Welcome to Radio Anguilla.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Mr. Lake.
Well, let's just get to know Mr. Wallace a little better. Mr. Wallace, tell us a little about you and what you've done in the past.
Well, I've spent most of my life, I suppose, in and around the tourism business. I started off really working at the Ministry of Tourism in the Bahamas, and then I went to work for Resorts International, which was then the largest private company in the Bahamas, rose to the level of the office of the president, meaning three of us ran the company. And thereafter there was an election and the government invited me to become Director General of Tourism. And thereafter I went to the CTO as the CEO and Secretary General of Caribbean Tourism Organization, then back to the Bahamas as Minister of Tourism, and now running my own consulting business.
Right, so it's fair to say that you're an experienced voice on tourism in the Bahamas, and I would say even the Caribbean.
Well, I like to believe that. I look at the range and variety of clients that I have, and they seem to believe that also, so I've been very fortunate in that regard.
All right, good. In the Caribbean, we have quite a few challenges in tourism. We're a warm weather destination. Obviously, we are sought after by our tourists that come to this region. But there are quite a few challenges. And off the bat, one of them that comes to mind right now is access. Give me your impression on that and basically some of the things that we should do probably to solve that.
Well, first of all, I want to congratulate you and the association for this initiative, Tourism is Key, because one of the things many people don't understand is the whole tourism business and how powerful it is in terms of growing the economy of the countries of the Caribbean. And what has happened through the years is as more and more countries focus on the effects of globalization, what is critically important is what you need to do is go and focus on those things that you do very well compared to everybody else in the world, the whole principle of comparative advantage. Well, we don't have to look very far to determine what our comparative advantages are, because the Caribbean is one of the most desired places for people to come to in the world. And the good news is that when you look at the kind of vacations that people want to take anywhere around the world, the biggest desire is to take a warm weather vacation. We have that. The next thing is you ask, where would you like to take that warm weather vacation? The number one place is the Caribbean. We have that. And the great thing about the Caribbean is that people intuitively understand it is a variety of different kinds of experiences all in the same place. There's no sameness in the Caribbean. You can go from Anguilla to St. Martin right next door and you get a completely different experience. And that is what is so powerful. In fact, it's reflected very much in what cruise ships sell. Cruise ships sell people going from port to port to port. So they give them this variety of experiences, but we have that in the Caribbean. Now to go back to your central question about access. Access is critical. And access is critical for one thing, and many people go to business school and they don't understand something that makes tourism unique. Unlike any other business in the world, tourism has only one store on earth. You only have one shop. And so therefore, people have to come to your shop to buy things. So the cost of what they are buying has to do with the cost of getting to your shop and the ease and ability of them to get to your shop. So access, to go back to your question, is critically important in the tourism business. And I always give the example, and we have a beautiful young lady here as a producer for this program. I always give the example of talking about, you know, like Fendi, the bag that many women know. Fendi, I believe, is produced in Milan, Italy. If you could only buy a Fendi bag in Milan, Italy, how many bags would they sell? Because the cost of that bag is really the cost to get to Italy to buy the bag. That's what makes tourism different. And so anybody who talks about tourism without talking about access is really missing what is important big time. And so to hear you come immediately to that really gives me an enormous understanding of the people here who say, look, that is critically important, we need to fix that. And I am confident it's going to be fixed, not just simply for Anguilla, but for the entire Caribbean.
Well, what are some of the challenges, though, that that airlines face, for example, coming into the Caribbean, that needs to be looked at?
Well, the number one challenge is, and this is a very strange thing, and we were talking earlier about the importance of accounting. The very strange thing is that, unlike in many other places, the Caribbean suffers from something that is self-inflicted, and what it's called its taxes. Tell me a business that what people do regularly is make it more expensive for you to get to my shop. Now, why would I do that? Why would I continue to make it far more expensive for you to get to my shop, when in fact what I want you to do is to make it as inexpensive as possible so you spend more money in my shop? Because that money, instead of being spent on the taxes and the ticket, is being spent in the shop among the people to a much greater degree. So one of the critical things we have to do in this region is to take a look at what we've been doing to our primary export, which is really tourism, is making it more and more expensive. And the problem is, what we have many times is many politicians, and I understand it, I was one of them, I participated in it, many of them look at taxes on visitors as avoiding taxes on local people and say, well, you know, I'm going to get my money from visitors. The problem, because visitors don't vote. Visitors vote with their money. They go someplace else. You don't see them, but they go someplace else. And so one of the things we must do, and we will do, and it's going to be happening in our lifetime, we're going to find that we're going to reduce the cost of access substantially, and the governments are going to make far more money on the increased volume of visitors coming and the taxes that they collect from that activity in the destination. That's the way tourism is supposed to work, not try to get most of the taxes you have at the border.
All right, so basically, I mean, you know, we look at airlines, and you know, when that fee is broken down, you realize that the arrival city has $160 taxes, the departure city has $160 taxes, and the airline probably gets $200.
That's so exactly right. So that's exactly right. Yeah.
I want to summarize the point, because you know, in Anguilla, I'm sure we have the same challenge. Mm-hmm. And the challenge is we feel as though, you know, the tourists are the transient visitor, mm-hmm. And basically they're not voting, they come to spend money, let's take the taxes. And we do it at the beginning, we do it at the end. And basically what you're saying is, let's get them to come in, all right, as cheaply as possible, and let them spend that money within the country where it has a greater effect. Basically, you know, employees are paid, they pay bills, they shop, they do all that with the money they make from the tourists, and it has a bigger effect on the economy.
Here is something that many people in the hotel sector and accommodation sector don't like to hear. If you want to find the best model of how to do that, it's called a cruise line. What the cruise lines have done have made the cost of access as close to zero as possible. Now, how have they done that? If you notice, in the last several years, when the cruise business has exploded, what they have done is taken their cruise ships and they depart from many and more ports up the eastern seaboard of the United States. And so you have ships coming from New York, from Philadelphia, from the Carolinas, from Jacksonville, and they don't all come from Miami anymore. Because what they figured out was that the cost of flying into Miami was a deterrent to their passengers. So now if they take their ships and put them up the East Coast, many people now drive to the ship. And what they do is, once you get on board the ship, everything isn't free. You spend more money on that ship, and they make more money once they get you on board the ship. We don't have to look very far for the model that we should be following. We look many times and we curse these cruise lines, but they're the geniuses of the business in terms of what you do. The Caribbean runs like 60% occupancy year-round. The cruise ships coming in the Caribbean run 100% occupancy year-round. It doesn't take much for us to figure out what it is we ought to be doing. We got to lower the cost of access and earn the money once they get here, because now people are spending far more money at the destination. That's when the taxes grow. That's when the profits grow. That's when the satisfaction grows. So there is the model.
Good. Yeah. One of the challenges we have here in Anguilla is there are a lot of people who work in the tourism industry because it's a job, not necessarily because they want to be in the industry or they love being in the industry. I mean, many times when we go to speak to the schools, and I know you shared a similar story yesterday, when you go to speak to the schools and you ask kids, how many of you want to work in tourism? One or two hands. But yet, we have a population where 65% are directly working in the industry. And my question to you, how do we change the perception that working in the industry is a good thing to do?
Well, I will tell you first by saying, you know, my mother, who was a housekeeper, and my father, who was a butler, used to tell me as a young kid growing up, say, son, I'm working very, very hard to make sure you don't have to work in this industry.
And you didn't take the advice.
I didn't take the advice. And let me tell you, there's nothing that can get me to leave this industry today, because the opportunities are incredible. We started doing something in the Bahamas in the early 1990s, which is very important, and I will talk to a number of people about it this afternoon. What's very important is to, we went and asked parents, if you have a very bright and capable child, would you like them to work in the tourism sector? In the 1990s early, it was 17%. You did the test about 3 years ago, it's now up to 70%. So now a lot of the very bright and energetic, hardworking kids are looking to come in the industry. And the difference is very simple. We need to let children know that not only is it satisfying, you can earn a good living. Once we get this thing turned around, we love to talk about tourism in sociological terms and nationalistic terms and how it was wonderful for people to come to our country and it's great to treat them right. But people also want to know, I can earn a good living. And quite frankly, this is the biggest industry in the world. It's the fastest growing industry in the world. It is the most competitive industry in the world. You cannot survive and succeed unless you get your best and brightest people coming into it. Now, there are some ways to begin to attract those people, but when you begin to talk about what you can earn and improve your own perceived status of it, and you and I were talking earlier this morning, it is a most sophisticated industry. We used to say something, and I ban people from saying something. We used to say, it doesn't take rocket science. Yes, we need rocket scientists in tourism too, in order to make sure we are doing it as well as these cruise lines are doing it. The reason we're running 60% is because we haven't applied the rocket scientists to get the work done. And once we get that done, you're gonna find that the thing is gonna turn around. So we want the very best kids. Now, I wanna advise you to do this, but I did something in the Bahamas, for which I got into a lot of trouble. I went 1 year when I was Director General of Tourism, and I made an announcement that says that if you are the valedictorian of your high school, or if you're the top of the class of your high school, you automatically get a job for the summer at the Ministry of Tourism. We tell people we want bright people. And to this day, I can show you things in the Ministry of Tourism that high school kids started, programs that they started, because let's take our good people and our best people and put it in our best industry, and you're going to see some positive results.
And you're so correct about that. I mean, a lot of people feel that in the hospitality industry, the only jobs are waiters, waitresses, front desk personnel, and so on. But to be honest with you, there's so much more out there. All right. I was having a conversation with one of my staff last night. I said, you know, in this industry, I know a person that went to college with me. They didn't really like doing hospitality, so they ended up doing nursing. And I remember them actually opening the nurse's station within a hotel, all right, and running it for 4 years before actually ending back up in the hospital. But, you know, the industry runs the gamut.
Yes,
there's so much to do.
Absolutely. There is no sector of the economy that needs a broader range of talents than tourism. None. And that is so very, very important. And every time I look around, I find, let's take a look at an area that I'm having a lot more specialty in, which is the application of technology to tourism. We need computer programmers like you have never seen before. because the tourism sector, in my opinion, is still far behind in terms of how we can apply information technology in order to make visitor experiences better. And we're going to be doing some stuff which I can't talk about right now over the course of the next 3 months that are going to be spectacular in terms of applying that. Now, in my case, I had to go to Florida to find programmers in order to get this stuff done. Why? Because we never develop a culture in our own country where large numbers of young programmers are working on a particular matter that applies to my biggest in tourism sector. So anybody who tells you that you only need the frontline staff in tourism, they're missing the boat big time.
Agreed. One of the things, challenges that I know exist in a lot of Caribbean countries, and the Caribbean is primarily just tourism. Even for the countries that have moved away from agriculture and so on, it has turned to tourism. Our service levels, it's a known fact that the Caribbean lags behind in service levels. Mm-hmm. And when I talk service levels, I'm not necessarily talking from within the hotels or within the restaurants, but within the country in general. The fact that sometimes you go to many countries and you do not feel welcome by customs, immigration, in some cases taxi drivers, and even in some cases, you know, when you go out into the shops and supermarkets, etc. And it's something that needs to be fixed. Can we discuss that a bit?
Well, you know, I mentioned at the beginning that there were two things peculiar about tourism. I mentioned one, which is we only have one shop on earth. The other part of tourism peculiarity is everybody is involved, whether we like it or not. Every single citizen of the country is involved in the tourism business because the visitor doesn't care who treated them bad. They know that I ain't going back there again. So you could sit at your property and make sure everything is perfect and wonder why your business is disappearing. You better get out in the broader community and make sure that the wider community understand that we have to be hospitable to everyone. The other thing we have to do in tourism is recognize there's a difference between hospitality and service. Service requires a lot of training. And we have a definition of quality service that I keep defying anybody to come up with a better one, and if they do, I'll adopt it, which is anticipating the needs of your customers and providing for those needs before they ask for them or before they know they want them. You see, the great part about service is when you get something that you never expected or anticipated or you didn't pay for is when the real value begins to happen. So you need people, and I always say, make this point too, good service has more to do with thinking than with doing. When you think about what these people might want and give it to them, that's when quality service begins to happen. And when somebody is properly trained in that regard, and so throughout the region, one of the areas that people see the Far East as far better than the Caribbean is in this level of service. If we fix this level of service, and we must, we are gonna be able to find ourselves in a position where everybody wants to come and knock our doors down. I mean, I always say the ultimate objective of the Caribbean, everybody should stop charging a departure tax and start charging admission. When you get to the point where you're so good, you start charging admission, you're wonderful. But when you're charging a departure tax, either you're punishing people as opposed to they are so desirable, they're so desired to come there that they charge you admission.
So, yeah. That's very good to say it. Mm-hmm. Now, it's how do we get people to understand that? Because, and I want to bring it home a bit. Mm-hmm. We don't quite. Many of the people outside of the industry, and I'll hasten to say even some within the industry, don't quite understand the importance of tourism to their country, to the economy. And therefore, it's treated like a stepchild, for use of a better word. Mm-hmm. So how do we get people to understand what they should be doing and the importance of it to
well, them? I think there are several ways. One is people have to begin to feel it, no matter where they are. And we talked yesterday about something that I've seen done that had great effect, which was we had some visitors come in, pay some money at a particular store in, say, the central town area, And then we marked some of those bills and allowed those bills to circulate through the economy. And 3 months later, say to people, anybody who has one of these bills, we will give them some special prize. When you find somebody who is at a service station with one of those bills in their hands, who does not work directly in the tourism sector, they begin to understand, hey, I'm part of this too. We have allowed for too long people to believe that tourism only happens in little hotels and resorts, and people don't see how the thing triggers. And you get to the stage, particularly when you see a US dollar, you begin to understand, oh, so that's where it comes from. When you get people understanding that, they begin to internalize this idea, hey, I'm part of this too, because look, I have this money that really came to me from somebody else who got it directly from a visitor. And that's part of it. So all of these little techniques begin to cause people to be far more understanding of the sector and to embrace it in a very particular way.
That's a very interesting concept. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure we could do it with US dollars in Anguilla. They're all over.
Yes.
But that's very interesting. Because
When you mark it, you know that that dollar came from a visitor. You see, right. And that's the key part about it, that particular dollar. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think the key is, you know, here is that basically people need to understand that it trickles down.
Correct.
All right, and it gets down to the very ordinary person on
that's
the street
correct.
Who has nothing to do with tourism,
that's right.
Absolutely.
How
basically, because you know we've just said it does trickle down.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you perceive as some of the ways that it affects, you know, because I'm sure it's not only in Anguilla. A lot of people feel, well, the hotels are making lots of money, you know, they're the ones that are benefiting from tourism. Why should we do anything about it? And I mean, just to be a little controversial, I sometimes feel that is what happens in Anguilla. And I'll give you a very good example. The marketing budget for tourism, mm-hmm. which is, in my opinion, the biggest earner in Anguilla, or the biggest revenue maker in Anguilla, is $3 million. Our revenue budget in Anguilla is somewhere around 180. At some point in time, it was way above $200 million.
Right.
All right? But the budget for tourism, which brings in and facilitates all that money coming in, is $3 million. How are some of the ways that the tourist dollar trickles into the economy that facilitates all the other revenues being made?
Well, one of the great things is something that the United Nations World Tourism Organization has been doing is creating something called a tourism satellite accounts. It's a very useful tool to begin to show people exactly how the tourism dollar flows through the economy. So there's no more dispute, no more discussion, and it has to be done by the Ministry of Finance. It can't be done by the Ministry of Tourism. So it has absolute credibility. And adopting that has become a very important way for the government to begin to see, oh, this thing is very important in terms of how it moves through the economy. So in terms of the indirect flows, the direct flows, and the induced flows from tourism, that is very important understanding. But the other thing is, the one thing we all have to focus on is growth. We all have to take our $3 million, whatever the number is, and begin to grow the economy. Because if you're running at 50% occupancy without one more capital investment in the new room, you have all these rooms available. You have more rooms available. And if you begin to fill those rooms, all of a sudden you begin to employ more people, the economy begins to grow, and when you go to the government and say, we need some more money for tourism, they begin to figure out themselves that this makes all the sense in the world. But as long as we continue to float around the 50, 60%, we're gonna find ourselves in trouble. But you see, the great upside for tourism has always been this excess inventory. I always make the case in the Bahamas that, you know, we love to talk about foreign investment, but the biggest foreign investment we have is right here with these empty rooms. Fill these empty rooms, because the best news you can tell a foreign investor is, hey, come to me, we are running 80% occupancy, we need more rooms, and we are doing well and making good profits. It's the best news you can ever tell an investor. So the idea of, first of all, making sure we use that money in order to grow the business as effectively as you can, you show the connection through a tourism satellite accounts between what tourism is delivering and how it expands the economy, When you get those two things in sync, all of a sudden everybody begins to understand and embrace that this very strange, airy-fairy thing that we call tourism is really a powerful engine for the economy.
You touched a little on marketing there, so let's delve into that a bit. The internet is here.
Yes.
All right. Obviously, we all have websites, we all have this, we have that. How can the internet be more effective for us as, let's say, hoteliers, even the government, in terms of getting to the customer, what we can do with the customer, marketing ourselves, etc.?
Well, you know, I always say something that I get myself in trouble, but since I'm going to leave tomorrow, I guess it's okay for me to say it. You know, I always say that, you know, God created man to create the internet to help the Caribbean. The internet is the most powerful tool for tourism since the jet airplane, by far. Because what we sell is information. We don't sell anything else but information. That's it. That's all we sell. We tell people, look at this, read this, listen to this, and then come to me. There is no tool that has been created in the history of mankind of distributing information more efficiently than the internet. And so if that is the case, we find ourselves in a situation that's extraordinary. Second of all, in terms of making a reservation, somebody in Timbuktu can now make a reservation directly with a little property in Anguilla with no middleman whatsoever. That has never been possible before. So we have capabilities and capacities, and one of the things I'm going to talk at my presentation today is how the internet has improved everything from visibility to hospitality to sustainability. Every single area that we do business in, information transmission, efficient information transmission is what makes all the difference in the world. And so you get a place like Anguilla that can lead the region in terms of the application of the internet, digital technology to tourism, and improve every single phase. The one great big thing we need to remember is that there is something called word of mouth that we all talk about and we all acknowledge. Now it is word of internet. And the problem is, this is a permanently archived word of mouth online. I can go online and see something about a product at any time. So the visitor experience has never been more important, because every day people are walking around with digital phones, digital devices, taking pictures, recording things, sending it on Facebook, sending it on Instagram, sending it on Twitter. So your customer now is your best potential marketing person, but also the person who can sync you. So you better get your experience right, because they are right at the time they're in your destination sending stuff back home to make sure that they are communicating with people. So the value of the internet has been outstanding.
All right, as we wrap up, you know, I think it's important to come back to service a bit. And I know that you told me a story yesterday of how technology can improve service. And I think it's important to share that as probably your last word, so people could understand the impact that something like that can do.
Well, I started a business that was based on this entire story. I was at the Ritz-Carlton in Palm Beach. I got in very late at night, and on the menu they had lobster salad. And where I come from, you could only have a Guinness stout with lobster salad. So I asked Ritz-Carlton, I need to have a Guinness stout. Can I tell me where to go outside and get a Guinness stout? So they said to me, no. We'll go outside and bring it for you. So room service went outside the hotel, got two bottles of Guinness, and brought it with their room service with a lobster salad. And I thought this was phenomenal service. 3 months later, I went to a Ritz-Carlton in Atlanta. I walked into my room, and there was a note on the minibar saying, Mr. Vanderpool Wallace, there's a bottle of Guinness in there for you. Please let us know you need another one. That's the genius of using digital technology to deliver service that I could never have expected and made me feel very special. So when we begin to collect that information and provide this value to people, we are doing something very special.
Thank you, Mr. Wallace. It was a pleasure having you here in the studio with us, talking tourism. I hope that everyone had an opportunity to listen to Mr. Wallace. And, you know, it's an opportunity for us to understand the importance of tourism to Anguilla, probably from a broader scale, and also to understand that service is important. Tourism is definitely key to success.